Next item is the Executive Officer's Report. Matt St. John.
Thank you. Wanted to provide an update on a couple of different things. My update will be about 15 to 20 minutes, and so I know that there was some potential interest in continuing our closed session discussion. But so as a 15 to 20 minute presentation for report for me at this time, okay with you? Or would you like?
Yeah, pick your time.
So first of all, I received an email shortly after lunch, so I may be bearing the news for the first to John and Kelly. There's congratulations is in order. You have been confirmed by the Senate.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
Congratulations.
Yeah. Right, yes, you got 3 years, and they'll forget about the win them. Yeah.
Unleash the beast.
The inner voice.
There was a mention in, I think it was Alita's presentation, about a Russian River Regional Monitoring Program, and I wanted to give you a little bit more information about that. So we have partnered. There's an article in the written executive officer's report, article that Colleen Hunt wrote, that highlights work that we've partnered with the city of Ukiah, who, on behalf of the Russian River Watershed Association, submitted a stormwater application for under Prop 1. And has received a $500,000 grant, which then also includes almost $700,000 of matching funds. And this is to develop a stormwater resource plan for the entire Russian River watershed. Wow. This is dovetails with some state discretionary contract funds that our office was successful in securing $200,000 from the state board to develop the governance structure for the Russian River Regional Monitoring Program. So we're going to be contracting with the San Francisco Estuary Institute Aquatic Science Center, who have done a lot, have significant experience in developing these regional monitoring programs, and they are going to assist us and the Russian River Watershed Association in developing this governance structure. We also have received or are receiving some settlement money from an enforcement case, $30,000. Which is going to go also to the San Francisco Estuary Institute to basically compile and assess all of the existing water quality data for the Russian River watershed and display it using the Aquatic Science Center's CD3 data portal. So by having that analysis complete, by then having the governance structure for the regional monitoring program developed, we're in about 2 years from now, we're going to have a fully functioning regional monitoring program for the Russian River watershed. It's a huge success. This started as an idea that I floated to the board of the Russian River Watershed Association just 18 months ago. And so in a relatively short time frame, we now have over $1 million, which includes the matching funds, to develop this regional monitoring program. And in another 2 years, it's going to be up and running. So it's pretty exciting. And it's going to be modeled after the regional monitoring program for San Francisco Bay and the one that we already are implementing in the Klamath Basin. Any questions on that? I wanted to highlight that we have had several regional basin plan amendments that have been gone through approval at the Office of Administrative Law. These are three basin plan amendments that you approved, that were approved by the State Board and have now been approved by the Office of Administrative Law, which now makes them is the final approval step. So that includes the on-site waste treatment systems policy, the temperature implementation policy, which included the TMDL action plans for the Navarro and the Eel River watersheds, and then our basin plan amendment, the water quality objective update amendment. Right. Mm-hmm. That third one does have one more step because it's a water quality standard. It does need to be approved by the by US EPA, but that is under their review now. But so those basin plan amendments are now officially part of our basin plan and will be amended into our basin plan. Very briefly, because we gave the presentation on it by Catherine Carter about our coordination with our counties related to blue-green algae monitoring, I just wanted to let you know that we continue that coordination with the Sonoma County Department of Health Services here in the Russian River watershed. And based on some low-level detections recently of blue-green algae toxins, the Department of Health Services last week decided to follow the state guidelines and to post caution signs along certain recreation beaches on the Russian River. Just as of today, we had a coordination call this morning, and as of the monitoring conducted this week, there were no algal toxins detected. So that's we like the trend in that direction. But there's been the decision to maintain the caution signs. We want to have at least 2 weeks of non-detects before we would consider a change to those postings. The conditions in the Klamath aren't quite so are worse. In Iron Gate Reservoir, I think it was 2 weeks ago, they actually had to change from warning signs, which exclude swimming and animals, to danger signs, which essentially effectively close the water body to recreation. So Iron Gate has now been posted with danger signs, and Kopko Reservoir has also been posted with those danger signs. A brief update from the Klamath Fish Health Assessment Team, KFAT. The alert level for the Klamath is at yellow, and this is primarily due to elevated temperature conditions. As you'll recall, these alert levels are based on risk for fish disease or a fish kill. And so a yellow level essentially puts all the agencies and tribes and interested public on notice of a potential risk, but it's not at a higher alert level yet. Just want to read from Catherine Carter's recent summary email. The flows are still higher in the main stem and tributaries than in past years due to higher than average snowpack and resulting runoff. Prevalence of infection by, I'm going to not pronounce this correctly, forgive me, parvicapsula and C. shasta in juvenile fish is lower so far this year as compared to the last several years where there was a 90 to 100% infection rate. So far it's looking better. There have been no detections of ick so far this year, though not many adult Chinook have been found in the river to date. The predicted fall Chinook run size is predicted at 54,000 adult fish, which is the lowest predicted return since the early 90s, where there's the mean run size of 128,000. So considerably depressed run size this year. So that has resulted in reduced allocations for tribal subsistence fishery as well as recreational harvest in the Klamath Basin. So we'll continue to keep our eyes, obviously, on KFAT efforts, and I'll update you with email updates as more information comes in from the Klamath Fish Health Assessment Team. Okay, now I want to turn to an update for you about our cannabis program. Start with an update on our current enrollment numbers. We have had an increase in the enrollment numbers over the last 2 months of about 39%. The total number of enrollments to date, as of August 1st, is 568 enrollments, with an additional 84 that are in process. And so generally when they're in process, it means we've received the notice of intent but don't have a payment. So it's not an official enrollment yet. The breakdown in terms of the counties, the total of 568, of that total, 408 are in Humboldt County. So the vast majority of the enrollments are in Humboldt County. 88 enrollments in Mendocino County, one enrollment in Siskiyou County, 11 enrollments in Sonoma County, and 60 enrollments in Trinity County. And I have the breakdown by tiers, and so I can, if you're interested in that, I can provide that to you in written form, unless you'd like me to go over it now.
So Trinity County had a question of how long does it take to process an enrollment? If they get the payment and timely.
Connor or Diana, can you help answer that question?
Connor McEntee, staff environmental scientist. To process the enrollments, we're required to process the check within 72 hours. Of enrollment. They'll get uploaded into our database system as well if we have all of their information within that same time period as far as the initial phase, getting their basic landowner information and whether or not they made a payment. The majority of the time we're finding that people aren't bringing forth their monitoring and reporting form. A lot of that just has to do with put a lot of information out there to them. It's kind of a lack of understanding on their part of what's really required of them immediately. There's confusion between, is that come in at 6 months when I'm going to develop the water resource protection plan, or do I need to submit that right away? We were asking for it right away. So it shows as though it's incomplete, but I think that was in some measure our lack of clarity with the outreach effort that we did with the community to let them know that was part of the process of getting it in. And so what we've been doing is sifting through that and sending out letters of notification of an incomplete application that they haven't submitted that part of it. And so that generally goes out. We've been trying to keep up with it, although within 30 days of their initial enrollment, to let them know that they need to do that, and giving them a time period to then resubmit that once it's in, to show that their initial enrollment is considered complete. But the short answer is, we'll have some level of information verification on their end in terms of landowner information and payment within 72 hours of the receipt of that initial information.
But they need that permit to apply for the county license. So how long before they actually get the full permit that they can take to the county and say, I have it?
So what we've been distributing so far is a letter of acknowledgement or receipt of notice of applicability for enrollment, and that it you know, it depends on whether, when they're turning in their monitor new reporting form, you know, so that we don't consider it officially complete until that monitor new reporting form is actually turned in. And so while they have put in their landowner information and their payment, they might not have completed the monitor new reporting form, which is about 5 pages of kind of semi-technical information, a lot of which landowners feel as though they can't adequately answer because it hasn't been requested of them before. This is some of the feedback that I've been getting. So they're saying that some of the information they don't necessarily have the right answer for. They're just beginning to meter some of their water use statistics and getting some of that information that will be available potentially at the end of the season. And some of the other kind of technical things that they're being asked to do that they as individual landowners don't necessarily know, and so they've been kind of lagging and actually getting that information back to us. But we are requesting that they get it to us. We're it's part of our progressive compliance assistance moving into an enforcement if they don't complete it for us. But the application isn't considered complete until that piece is in.
Okay, let's say you're a perfect grower and you have all the data and you give them all the monitoring. How long is it taking to process everything from beginning until you get the permit?
If it's all completely in within 72 hours, we should have that and then be able to send a letter back out to them if it's actually all in. But the what we're finding is that there's very few of them that are actually doing that.
The county doesn't accept the letter, and they want the actual permit. How long does that take?
The letter is the permit from us.
The letter is the permit.
Yeah, essentially the notice of applicability.
Yes.
Is the letter from us.
So that's not like a real permit. It's just a letter. So in 72 hours, it'll be done and processed in the office?
It'll be processed, and then we'll need to then send the letter out to them, which we've been batching up until this point. But if there are individuals that would like it immediately, we can send out a single letter.
I think it's safe, I think it's safe to say that our goal is to have the responses within 30 days.
Okay, that's what I was thinking.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, I need some help connecting some dots on Prop 64. I'm a little off topic here, but it has to do with cannabis, and I'm going to bring it back to our program. So like the teenagers say, it's exactly the same, only different. So as I read Prop 64, what the voters will be asked to vote on this November is that personal use will allow 6 plants and what an ounce in possession of processed marijuana. But working with Mendocino County and other jurisdictions, I get the sense that they're writing permits for commercial scale cultivation. And I don't read that in Prop 64. And so if the County of Mendocino allows 99 plants or 1,000 plants, I don't know what the limit is, we will continue to just act as we have been with this program of ours of allowing people to enroll. Has anybody read Prop 64 yet? You need to read it because I don't get it.
Is that the adult use of marijuana act that's being proposed
yes.
by the several entities? And
maybe I missed something, but in it was quite clear, 6 plants and an ounce. And all these counties are going off registering what I would consider commercial scale operations. I haven't had a chance to sit down with the Ag Commissioner yet in Mendocino County, but he's registering people. And so I don't, you know, what are we going to do? Just keep doing what we're doing, I guess?
So we've been commenting on the draft ordinance, on counties' draft ordinances. I don't feel personally prepared to answer that question. I think you're asking a good question, but rather than staff kind of provide some conjecture and not well thought out responses, I'd rather we come back and give you another report. John, you seem to have some statement.
Well, I'm very puzzled by your answer. I thought we were certifying people, and then they had to comply with other laws, and that's what we did. And theoretically, someone could come in with 30,000, 60,000 plants, which they're doing in some places, and they would get our certification. Now, that doesn't protect them under federal law, doesn't protect them under county law, doesn't protect them under fish and game law or anything else, but I thought it was very clear we were not entering that arena.
I may have misunderstood the question. I thought he was asking how the draft ordinances are different from our permit requirements, and I was just saying I'd like us to do a more detailed analysis of that to be able to report back.
Yes. Yes to what you said, and yes to what you said. I mean, again, this continuing confusion over who's in charge of this program and what the voters are going to be asked to ratify versus what I see counties rushing off to do, establishing tax fee schedules and the like. So, yeah, maybe we'll just take one challenge at a time, but right. We can come back and get some clarity on our program, and then I'll try and work out the other one.
So yeah. I know that in Trinity County, the commercial growers are falling under MRSA, and then Prop 64 is a totally different animal. Is the medicinal marijuana? So that's commercial medical.
Yeah, and so I'll remind you that Josh Curtis provided a written article about MRSA. Was that in the June executive officer's report or perhaps May?
I think it was May or April, actually.
Even April. So we have commented on what MRSA is and what its requirements are. Some of the implications for how it dovetails with our permit are included in that EO report article. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
The only thing, this is Josh Curtis of your staff. The only thing I'd like to add is that our current plan, I think, as you said, Chairman Corbett, wouldn't change depending on any of those, the new legislation or MRSA, except for, I think, our interactions with the other agencies that are going to be involved in them. So the Bureau of Medical Marijuana Regulation, which has changed into Cannabis Regulation, BOCR, they're kind of the lead of that process. And for the medical marijuana one, and then how I read the prop when I read it 3 months ago, is that basically is in line with the basic constructs of the medical marijuana law, and it's basically going to be an overlay. But so a lot of the same regulations that are being developed now for the medical marijuana process starting January 1st of 2018 will be the same or very similar regulations for the for recreational use. But there may have been changes in the last 3 months that I'm not aware of, and we can look that up.
And there's SB 837 over the top of all that.
And I'm not aware of.
That's the one where they changed the name of MRSA, and then they also added all the water stuff to it. They had a ton of water, like this fishing water wildlife has to go in and determine what the minimum flow in each creek has to be, and then redo all the water rights so people can't, along the creek, can't take more than, draw it down past the minimum.
There is a lot going on in the whole this legal and regulatory framework, and so it sounds like there is interest in and getting more information about that
and how they all flow together.
Speak
on the confusing. I just one before we get off the.
Well, it's confusing to us too.
Do we have a checklist for the application? Kind of like Mr. Lee was saying that it was confusing. Do we have, like, I know when I apply for things for the IRS, they have a checklist, and I go through and make sure I've checked off everything to make sure when I send my application in. Do we have that?
Yes, we do.
Oh, so there's a checklist that people can go through. So.
Yes.
It's part of the notice of intent form. Yeah.
Matt, I was going to recommend that maybe I take that article and redo it and add to the, do that maybe every 6 months to keep us updated on all the changes.
That's a great suggestion.
What about on the October meeting? I think we got a light agenda. Maybe that'd be a good one to discuss this.
Well, we can certainly do it as a written item, but if there's interest, we could bring it as an information item presentation as well. Yeah.
I think a presentation would be good on how they all blend together.
That might require requesting legal assistance for that. And so, to help present some of that. So we'll have to see if we can meet that deadline.
And I wasn't quite done with my report.
I
have one more question on the marijuana. So if it takes the 30 days for us to process it, how about if it goes through a third party?
It's a good question.
I don't know the answer to that question. I'll have to ask.
See how long that's taking.
Yeah. We don't provide the letter because they certify all the pieces, so it might actually be faster. But I'll have to ask that question.
I was going to ask a similar question, just a more along those lines, was how many third-party certification folks do we have right now approved and in line?
Great. Okay, well, that was part of my report, so I'll jump to that.
Thanks, Matt.
So we
moving
have,
right along.
As of today, we have three third parties that have been approved, and those are Jacobson and Associates, Pacific Watershed Associates, and Timberland Resource Consultants. So they are approved. All of their information is posted on our cannabis website. We have three additional third parties that we're currently in review of, and two of those were pretty close to making a favorable determination, very likely. So three currently, with likely five shortly. You'll recall that we've initiated an enrollment enforcement process, and at the April board meeting, Yvonne West from the Office of Enforcement gave a presentation to you on that whole enrollment enforcement process, which includes sending out what's called a 13-260 letter to landowners, and then has subsequent kind of progressive enforcement steps following that letter. We have in June, we did the first set of 13-260 letters that got sent out. A total of 204 letters got sent out, and we were targeting the Chemies Creek and Lower East Branch of the South Fork Eel River watersheds. In Eel River. So of those 204 letters, well, let me first say that one of the staff that was primarily tasked with tracking this moved to Colorado to be with his girlfriend. And so it has meant that Diana Henriol, who's trying to manage a whole program, has really been doing the staff work of tracking all of the response. So it's taken some time, and I really want to call out and appreciate Diana's hard work. So just a couple of, just to give you a flavor for the type of response that we're getting, of the 204 letters that went out, 156 of those letters were actually claimed, because remember, these were sent out as certified letters. So 34 of the letters weren't claimed, and a handful were sent to the wrong address, and things like that. Of the responses that we've received, 32 of the folks that received it said that they aren't growing, or said that they were growing in an amount less than the 2,000 square feet size threshold. A handful, 9 property owners said that they had since sold the property, so we're in the process of kind of teasing that out. And 57 responded saying that they had since enrolled or were in the process of enrollment, and we've been able to confirm that since we sent out the 204 letters, 48 folks have enrolled since, as a result of having received this letter. So 25% has led to, of the total that were sent out, have led to new enrollments. So we thought that that's pretty good as a start. 52 of the claimed letters haven't had a response, and so we are now in the process of identifying which of those need to go to this next step to receive a notice of violation letter. And so we're pretty sure that at least 32 of those of non-respondents are going to get the next letter, the notice of violation letter.
So, Matt, just to follow up, maybe Diana might have, of those 200 letters that went out, did they go to a P.O. box or a physical address? In other words, you know, how many absentee owners are there, and is it just a P.O. box that matches a parcel number? Any idea off the top of your head?
I couldn't give you a Diana Henry of your staff. I couldn't tell you exactly. Some went to PO boxes, some went to physical address that was the property location, some went to the physical address of wherever the owners lived. In some case, it was the people that enrolled. A number of them were the landowners directly, and some of them have been tenants that, you know, the letter got passed on to the tenants, and then they responded. And I'm still sifting through all the responses. It's a tedious process, and I'm still finding matching more responses up with what we sent.
And I was just wondering if, you know, a preponderance of the no responses were PO boxes versus physical address.
No
obvious trend in anything like
not address-wise, no.
Okay.
Excuse me if I was wrong. I thought our number one address was off the tax rolls.
Correct.
Where there's a duty of the owner to keep,
correct,
maintain a correct address. So it can be by general delivery, Alaska, or it can be a PO, or it can be,
correct,
anywhere, but that's what they register with the state of California's valid service.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
But nonetheless, there were some that came back as said, wrong address or person moved or unclaimed. But yeah.
When we bought our property, it took 3 years for Trinity County to get the address right. So
I understand there are internal difficulties in all the county tax offices, and if you deal with title and sale of property, you'll realize how acute that problem is. But
sure, I was pretty pleased with the number that actually made it to somebody, and that we got a response on. It narrows down the ones that we have to do more work to research for the next round.
But if they don't change their address, they're going to get a tax lien from the counties.
Indeed.
And so usually people get hep that they could lose their property eventually. So that's why that's such a great address.
So I had a question. When they're self applying and they're saying that they qualify and they've done all these wonderful things, do we go out and actually check to see if they're telling us the truth?
I'll tell you what I'm doing right now is I'm looking at each property. I'm also taking a quick look at Google Earth and making some comments about what I'm seeing and if it kind of matches up with the enrollment or I have less than 2,000 square feet. So there's a little bit of that. And, you know, you can't tell for sure unless you're on the ground at, you know, this year right now. But there are some where what's on the ground is quite a bit different from what the response was.
So do you do that verification before you send them the letter?
Our initial, we identified the sites that we sent the letters to based on looking at partly at the SIPs and partly at Google Earth imagery that's current through 2014. I went back and I'm still looking at 2014 imagery, but kind of looking at kind of the time-lapse history of, you know, how things were developed. But we also now have 2016 NAEP imagery, and I've just learned how to use that, so that's my latest technical achievement. And so I'll be looking at those before we send the NOVs, which I hope to do next week. I want to take a quick look at the 2016 imagery and just see what it's looking like on the ground.
What's
from
NOV?
The air.
That's the next. Oh, sorry. The next
notice of violation.
The notice of violation.
Oh.
So
my
it
letter
starts
two.
With the 13260 letter. If we don't get a response, then it progressive to what's called the notice of violation. Essentially, we're turning up the heat. At that letter, we say that there's a potential for a fine. And then beyond that, then we submit a pre-administrative civil liability complaint letter. At every step that we're moving up the progressive enforcement chain, we have to be a little more certain that there actually is a violation going on. And so we start with Google imagery, and that's kind of pretty good as a first cut assessment. And then in the next letters, we're going to be basing it on more refined aerial imagery.
Mm-hmm.
And if we go to the next step, then we might need to have a flyover or somehow get more site-specific information to verify, indeed, we're pretty sure you're growing.
It might guide some inspections where,
inspections.
Yeah.
So that letter, when they apply for a permit, we're doing that check then too, before we issue them the permit letter?
No, the NOI comes in, it gets logged in.
When they apply the first time, they want a water quality permit.
Yeah, that's the notice of intent.
No, that's the notice of intent.
That's
sorry,
the notice of intent. Okay.
Because we have a general order, and everybody who is growing 2,000 square feet or more of cannabis on private property in the North Coast region needs to enroll for coverage under that and comply with it. Everybody needs to. So when somebody sends us the paperwork that says, okay, I intend to comply with it, I think my property is a tier one or two, here's my monitoring and reporting program, they're telling us, okay, I want to be part of, you know, enroll in the order, and we say, okay, we received the pieces we needed for your enrollment, and here's your WDID number, your unique identifier, and we send, you know, now you're in.
And you do the Google Earth check at that point?
No, we don't.
No. I think board member, yeah, I think excuse me, I think I can answer that. So the process will be that we'll be doing audits as we go forward. So we'll have, you know, we'll get a list of people who've applied. We will do a risk assessment using SIPs and other imagery, and we'll do an audit process, and that audit will include imagery review. It'll include likely inspections on the ground. There'll be a whole process for that that's set up. We're still just getting, you know, this program is still fairly new. We're about to hire, well, not about to hire, but I think it was reported last time that we got 5 new staff approved, so we're building that capability in-house. So there's going to be some of that.
The audit will happen before you issue the permit.
No.
Oh, the permit is. I mean, it's not a permit. It's an order, and it is. So we're not issuing anything. We're just acknowledging that we've received your enrollment paperwork. It would be great. I would love to be able to look at the imagery for everyone, but every piece of this takes time.
I think just to make sure, so Kelly, so the order is the permit. Those terms are basically synonymous. And when a particular landowner or operator submits their notice of intent, we then log that in, or the third-party program does. And if it's done directly to us, we send them a letter that says, you're now enrolled. That letter is the document that then confirms that they're part of our program and they're enrolled in the permit. The letter itself isn't the permit. The order is the permit.
But okay, so I think some of the counties have been using it, saying that if you've enrolled, we know for some certainty that you are not causing water quality issues. It's just saying you promise you're going to adhere to the things in the order.
That's a very good point.
Promising, but it doesn't give the county any assurance that the person is complying.
Nor does it in our stormwater program.
It's true with all of our programs, and that's why.
We don't know whether the dairy are complying.
That's where I was, just a quick question, because I know we can go on for hours, but yeah. On Chemise Creek, is that where these letters went? If somebody wanted to put in a 5-acre, because what we're interested in is water protection.
Yes.
If somebody wanted to put in a 5-acre vineyard, would we do anything?
Yep. I mean, they would have to have, there's a different permitting mechanism that they'd have to go through.
Through us.
But
for the water. I know about all that, but before the water, in terms of would we require, you know, an erosion control plan? Would we, obviously they have to have legal access to the water that they're going to use, but my global question is, does the commodity matter in these overstressed watersheds?
No. We specifically put in, or other agricultural activities that cause, that have the same environmental effects. And in our order, and we put that in there, so if someone said, no, I have a rare form of tomato plants that looks like pot plants, so you're out of luck, we say, un contraire, that's an agricultural operation having the
like
same effect.
Similar environmental
we
effects.
Don't care, mm-hmm. Sign up. So it's silent. It basically covers miscellaneous ag. I wanted the permit entitled Ag Otherwise Not Regulated, but we got everyone is fixated on cannabis. So we have cannabis or other associated activities with a similar environmental effect. And we did it to get out of the burden of proof and having to have experts on staff who could relate the aerial photography in our enforcement actions and or in court that it was a marijuana plant as opposed to a tomato plant.
Any agricultural operation over 2,000
No. 2,000 square feet minimum of cannabis. If we see something else that looks like it's an operation with similar environmental effects of whatever size, water board staff can direct somebody to enroll for coverage and comply with it. But we're not saying automatically anyone that has 2,000 square feet or more of something like tomatoes has to enroll.
So we're in the, you know, we've been in the process of developing our agriculture program, and we prioritized the development of this cannabis regulatory program over other ag commodities with input from the board a couple years ago. We are at various stages of development, as you know, in terms of developing a vineyard and orchard permit. So I guess that really gets directly at your question or your example. But we don't currently have that yet. Our hope is that within the next couple of years, we will have a vineyard and orchard permit before you. The other commodities or geographic areas that we're working on are the lily bulbs up in Tule Lake. And I mean lily bulbs in the Smith River Plain, and then the
they're migrating
and the row crops in the Tule Lake, right. Tule Lake Basin.
I also want to compliment people on Google. That's where I would have started out, but I think that's a great first step to try and generate as many letters as you can. Yeah. I did want to ask on our verification if we think it's going to go to aerial flight. Where are we on the contracts? Yeah. Since that was an integral part of the program.
So I've asked Diana and Josh to in the October report, we'll have a more detailed answer for you. In brief, what I can tell you is that we're coordinating with our colleagues at Region 5 and State Board Office of Enforcement to expand the CIPS program, the Cannabis Identification and Prioritization System. And so they've done a cost estimate for the expansion of that, and we're looking into contracting options. In addition, with these new positions that we've gotten, which were effective as of July 1, we know that we're going to have salary savings, and we're trying to apply that dollar to having a contract for aerial flights.
And I was had suggested looking at Region 5 because I sort of thought we were going to be Region 5, but I found out they already have their aerial. But I'm not sure they have a very efficient
aerial. Well, John, it's our aerial. It's joint. The CIPS is for okay. Both of our regions, and actually it's more contract. Geographic area has been done in Region 1 right. Than Region 5.
Right. Okay, well, that's great. And then I know that we piggybacked with Humboldt Bay
Water District,
and that's really good. But I want us to make progress on our program. But I do want to say I thought Region 5 on the surface was an extremely expensive program per hour of flight, and to me, us piggybacking on it is great because we don't have anything. But I would hope we could look at long-term aerial costs and get a very cost-efficient program as being in our self-interest and actually for the state and ultimately for Region 5 to change to. But
I can speak a little bit to that, John. I'm just starting to look in this process for us. And Region 5, I believe, has a helicopter that they've contracted, which has its own concerns. I think we're looking at starting to look at hiring companies that actually go and do aerial imagery that is geo-referenced and brought quickly into a system, so you can get a broader view of a watershed.
That's the ticket.
And bring that in, and we can bring that both into CIPS, we can bring it into our own GIS process and use it that way, as opposed to a helicopter, which is much more focused on maybe looking at one or two properties specifically.
Well, it really makes sense if you're doing a raid, but raids are very expensive, time-consuming. We want as much as possible the aerial to the letter. To be efficient.
So that's where we're headed. But we're just it's
good.
The initial
well,
state.
I'm encouraged to hear that.
Yeah, and we'll be able to report
yes,
to you more in detail on that. We can report to you more in detail on that next board
okay.
meeting. The final piece of this cannabis program update. I know it's a little long. Is on our education and outreach efforts. And there's an article, I'm not going to repeat what's in there, an article that Adona White wrote about the Eel River Recovery Project, monitoring and water quality awareness pilot project, which is basically focusing on providing technical assistance related to water conservation and best management practices for cannabis. It's been very successful. There are two reports that are posted on our website, work products from this pilot project. If any board members are interested, I believe Mr. Higgins has brought a copy that he can share. We're scoping to have a phase two of the Eel River Recovery Project. And we're currently working with the state board to see whether we can get additional cleanup and abatement account funds to fund a phase two of that project. After hearing the presentation from the North Coast Resource Partnership, I actually think that that's another potential funding opportunity that we should look into for that. Pat is here to answer any, if you'd like more information about the work that he's been doing. He's prepared to just give you, answer your questions or give a very brief overview.
If it's okay, I did drive 500 miles.
I was trying to give you some time here, so.
Thank you, Sean.
Don't interrupt.
No.
I want you to stay there and give some time, hand us out the material. I did want to reaffirm the number one board priority has been aerial over even the certification project, and I keep stating that every meeting just so that that's clear.
Yeah.
What you have before you there is an article on up to the minute what's going on with cyanotoxins in the Eel River. And because the Eel River and its lower reaches is becoming very desiccated, it is also stagnating. And we're going from conditions where there were steelhead trout everywhere and lamprey in the hundreds of thousands possibly and pretty good run of Chinook salmon to a river that actually has passed its tipping point and is no longer suitable for recreation in its lower reaches. And that condition is progressing. And so we did phase one for you, which was fostered by the North Coast Regional Board staff, recommended for funding under cleanup and abatement. Took 2 years to get the funding. But what we were able to perform was actually quite exceptional, and the Department of Financial Assistance was extremely impressed with our level of performance. And that included 175 locations where we monitored water temperature. We pulled together 12 million data points back to 1980, all the water temperature data in the Eel. We did a roll-up where we can actually start to talk to people about where it's going dry before it's gone dry just through temperature trends. We monitored cyanotoxins and networked with small water districts, which otherwise are unserved in this regard. We worked at the Round Valley Indian Tribes to monitor cyanotoxins. We did outreach to hundreds of growers. We went to 70 farms. We collected data, which otherwise has been absent, and it was very, very well received. We have videos up on best practices, so if people don't want to read and they just want to watch a movie, they could go to our video channel. If they don't have computers out at their homestead but they have a DVD, we put it on DVD. So we're trying to find that way to have a culture shift happen much more rapidly than you'd anticipate, given the fragmented culture in the hills and kind of the culture under illegal operation. But we believe that in the transition here that there's a real opportunity. But the data in some regard, and this is the data in this report, it shows that almost nobody has a water meter. How are you going to start to conserve water and get a comprehensive plan as required by the waivers to get streams back on the surface if nobody even knows how much they're using? Many who have tanks don't have float valves, so they're not conserving water, they're spilling water onto the ground. And the other major problem is roads. And waivers say that people will bind together to help reverse conditions that are leading to massive erosion. And so these are the things that then drive phase two. And our phase two project would go to another 100 farms, have model farm tours where every aspect of conservation and living soils and operation of a sustainable farm would be like a three-ring circus, so in different parts of the watershed. We would set up an office where at least one day a week in Willits, Laytonville, and in Garberville, we would have best practices, and then the agencies could also staff those office spaces, which we would have reserved if they wish to be accessible, because people don't want you at their farm. And then they won't come out and come to a meeting where everybody identifies, and so will they drop in? And we believe that that actually will work. And, you know, the underserved, this is justified because the eel is in crisis. Hundreds of thousands of dollars are being spent on water trucks. Creeks are drying up that were perennial. Pacific salmon species are still thriving, but what if we worked with nature? So our project would also supply what I call a dream team to the people in Chemise if they came forward, how to coordinate on water storage, on water use, so that we can duplicate what happened in the upper Mattole and get Chemise Creek back on the surface, so we could get Sproul Creek back on the surface, so we can work with the people in Woodman Creek. And these are streams that I'm mentioning that I didn't just pick off a map. It's places where there is a foothold in the culture. And the original people that came back to the land, small is beautiful, God's in nature, they're the first adopters. Many of them do have small footprints. And so this is really necessary at this time to get the tipping point in biology is when something happens, one thing makes the whole system break apart. The tipping point in sociology is when rare behaviors become dominant ones. And you guys need us as an outside trusted player within the Eel River watershed, which is your big enchilada for marijuana. And we have spurred many people to come out and play by coming to visit them for free that otherwise would not have been exploring this. We have created a real buzz. And if we're able to get this next level of funding, I do believe that we can make a material difference in terms of a culture shift. It could be a model for the rest of... But the state says they could truck water to Rio Del if we ran out, but they can't have us teach people how to conserve water. And so it's kind of your distributed system versus your centralized system. You guys are all focused on the centralized system, wherein in the eel, it's mostly 1,000 points of diversion and many people that need to be educated in order to improve water storage, time water extraction to the season when it's appropriate, and to care about whether or not you're drying up your neighbor or causing toxic algae, and understanding that we're all connected. And I believe that there's conscience in the eel, despite the accounts in the press, and that we have a really good shot if we can get funding on this, and I hope that we can help, you guys can help us to get that. Thanks very much. Better than I used to be, huh, John? I used to go on for all day. That was like 5 minutes, so I appreciate it.
Thank you, Pat. Okay, so I think that's just a broad overview of all the different elements of the cannabis program. The board asked for that an update, so we wanted to provide that.
One last question, Pat. How many people that you're contacting are applying to water quality?
I believe it was the intent of all of them, and I think that your number of 400 in Humboldt County, if you looked at the overlap of how many people we reached and then how many people went forward, I bet you we really jump-started people.
Well, that's
and it, you know, in order to
higher.
See 70 people in the Klamath, or rather in the eel, I used to work in the Klamath. in order to see that many people, we actually had about as many false leads, John. So we're understanding that this is a mercurial culture, and they're not used to being organized. But the people that are coming forward, we're reassuring them. If in fact their scenes are clean and they look like they would have not too much trouble permitting, I know those people are jumping forward. And I think within the movement there's a lot of organizations that are trying to get compliance that are kind of working on your side, but their motives are different. You know, they're from the commercial end of things. But really, I think that's where we get to the rubber meeting the road, John, and that is if people that are producing the best medicine because they're drought stressing it and they're not despoiling the environment, if they end up getting more money for their product as opposed to the people that are growing bulk and, you know, doing bad things, then we have an amazing system going forward and something that works in your favor.
Right. Thank you.
I'm going to need your help. Yeah. I don't think this is going to be easy politically.
Okay. Now, anything more on the executive director report? I hate to go back to the well again. But
I'm an endless supply for you. But no, I'm all done.
Yeah, there's no overdraft, right?
There's no overdraft.
Anybody
I'm all done. Thank you with my executive officer report. Website?
Yeah, it's on the front page of the website at the top.
I'll check it out there.
And it's thank on you. Our website, too.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Matt, thanks so much.
And
thanks to staff. I mean, we are like joined at the hip, and it's not always fun and easy, but we appreciate it.
I'm not going to go there. Okay, we're at the end of the meeting. I said I call, do any board members want to go back into executive session, or do I call the meeting adjourned? So raise your hand if you want to go into executive session. Otherwise, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bella.
Sorry, I was going to ask quickly about the future agenda items.
Oh, by all means, you're on.
Because it says that our next meeting, October 20th, is in Siskiyou County, and I thought we
that
were going
incorrect.
To Del Norte County.
Yeah, no, that was an error.
Okay.
It is not in. It's going to be here. The next meeting is actually going to be here.
Are we planning to go to Del Norte to talk?
We are not.
Okay.
So I can.
And I might say, if we want it poorly attended, Trinity County might be an ideal location, and then that would also serve geographical diversity on Trinity County issues. Well, I won't even go there if we have board attendance problems, but maybe. But so. Why don't you make some input, and then we'll give it to Matt, and he'll get right back to us.
I don't know. What does the rest of the board feel about? Is this something the rest of the board wants?
I would like it sometime after November, but as soon thereafter as we can get.
I can come down here to have, like, real food.
You're a traitor to your community. Well, I do think, at a more serious level, I do think we need to have a meeting in Trinity for geographical diversity, and we will need to get something up north at some point on either Del Norte or Siskiyou. And I realize sometimes it's one of those communities quite challenging, but that's life, you know. We're not loved everywhere.
La Nina this winter, so it could snow.
Well, I'm proposing that we have the October board meeting in 2017 be in Siskiyou County, because the Scott and Shasta TMDL waivers will be coming back to
okay,
you.
Okay, great.
And so I'm thinking that that's probably the meeting where we'll have it in Siskiyou County. But if there's interest in, I mean, typically we have a spring meeting be in Humboldt County, as we did both the April and May meetings this year. And so in the proposed 2017 schedule that I emailed to all of you, I said that both March and May, I said location to be determined, and one of those will certainly be in Humboldt County.
And I would come back with a proposed firm date for strategic planning.
I think that's good.
Well, it doesn't, you know, we got to take into account weather conditions. I mean, but does this sound okay? If we have it by April, is that fast enough? And then maybe we can make it April.
Or sure. Something.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to be a fleeting chairman because board member Noren's going to be in charge. Let's try to not March or April. But when we set that date, it will be a firm date.
Yes, in December of 2015. And what I understood from a side conversation, I just did want to bring it back, was you aren't necessarily interested, this was Mr. Giusti's comment, you weren't necessarily interested in the detailed staff presentation that we provided in December of 2015. You were more hoping to kind of immediately go into some board dialogue. Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah, what I thought would be useful is for the board to sit down with you and Chinray and just discuss things, talk about things without a command performance from staff. I mean, I think, you know, we just need to be able to talk like we were in closed session and have a discussion.
I want to serve you, so I'm just
And I'm just throwing that out. I mean, that's just, you know.
That was my feeling, because I think that as a board, we need to kind of get on the same page of what our goals are, what our priorities are, some of the discussion we had at today's meeting, and just kind of discuss that with, you know, executive staff and council. and so we kind of look like
we're acting as a team.
As a team, yeah. Because it's either that or we do it in public dialogue at one of these meetings. So I don't know. You know, we can look at the calendar, but you know, we could tack a half day on, you know, the 15th and then one end and the other. So I don't mind just going right now. How far is it to where we were in December for the strategic planning meeting?
Oh, at least half hour. Up
half an hour.
45 minutes.
Yeah. Well, and that makes sense because there's less apt to be snow further south, although it could happen there. But so that might be a repeat site that's available.
Okay. Well, we will come back to you with a proposal, both in terms of timing and location and general kind of scope and content.
Okay. We'll get the date first, because I want to have the discipline of a date.
So we're kind of thinking of this as kind of like a retreat type thing, a board retreat.
Yes.
Kind of, what spurred this, can I talk about in my interview? So when I had a Senate interview, a part of the interview, I said, so I kind of work for you too. So what do you want from me as a board member since the governor appointed me? And their biggest concern is that across the state, boards aren't running their regions, and that the staff is overrunning the board members. And so they asked, when we had our last retreat, how did we feel? Of course, I said, you know there's new person. I'd been to like four meetings. But it was interesting that seemed to be their big concern, and they wanted to know how we worked as a board, and do we do retreats, and you know, that kind of thing. So I thought it was kind of interesting, so I brought that to Matt, and then talked to John, and thought that maybe that's something we should do, since that was something that all the Senate Rules Committee people asked. So I don't know. You know, we could be just fine.
Okay. Well, I think there's desire to go forward with it, or I'm going to order we go forward with it as chair. I think we've given some guidelines, see what you can come up with. And, of course, the more active the board is, the less work there is on staff, and the more the date can be certain.
Good. I will come back to you with a proposal.
Yeah. Only if you request it. Only if a board member, any board member requests it. Just raise your hand.
Well, I'd like to ask.
Okay.
Some continued discussion about that item would be valuable.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm requesting that we go into a short closed session.
Okay, well, then we will close this section of the public meeting and go into executive session and report back out any actions at such time as they are decided.
I'm going to just stand up.
Reopen the meeting. We discussed a law case as previously announced by council, and we have nothing to report. And with that, I'm going to adjourn the meeting.
Thank you.